Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to Sandra E. Lamb, author of a new book, Writing Well for Business Success, a complete guide to style, grammar, and usage at work. Stick around. Strunk and White be warned, she's gunning for you. I may be the worst writer in the world to be interviewing someone who has written a book with the subtitle, A Complete Guide to Style, Grammar, and Usage at Work. Honestly, I haven't paid strict attention to the rules of grammar since high school. Sometime in college, I figured out that if I focused on style and telling a coherent story, no one paid as much attention to my grammatical sins. Oh, and it helps to be a pretty good speller, too. But that's just me. Most people in business need to pay more attention to the technical details of what they write, alongside producing good content. In an instantaneous electronic era where your audience of executives, managers, or coworkers can receive documents from you in the blink of an eye and no take-backs, getting it right the first time is the only shot you get. Now, because I feel deeply for my office-bound brethren, I've invited journalist and lecturer Sandra E. Lamb to be my guest today. She is the author of a new book called Writing Well for Business Success, and she is here to help. Sandy Lamb, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here. And, you know, I got to be honest, despite my protests of style over grammar, I have to say that this ranks an entire chapter in your book. It's kind of false for me to say what I did. But only a few years ago, I mean, this would have been considered heresy, right?
To evaluate content over grammar?
Exactly. To think that you can style your way through rather than focusing on, you know, the way it's put together.
Well, certainly I think there are special requirements for the business writer. And of course, that's who I'm addressing in this book, is those people who have to write, and possibly it includes almost everyone, have to write at work. Because since the advent of the internet, and certainly now that business is done almost entirely by email, there is, of course, the good news and the bad news. The good news, of course, is that we have the immediacy of being able to communicate with people, as you said, in an instant, or before. Actually, sometimes I'm absolutely amazed. It seems I get an answer before I've asked the question. So it's like, oh my goodness, this is reading my thoughts. But that also has a dark side. And senior executives who I interview and sort of check in with periodically, who supervise a lot of people, say within the workplace, email is being rampantly fractured by people who are not using it properly. And it becomes a time waster for not only the people doing it, obviously, but for a lot of other people in the workplace.
You talk about, you were addressing a group and you asked about kind of the faux pas of email. You want to maybe mention a couple of those since you brought it up?
Well, right. I think that what bosses say is one of their top level complaints is that users of email are neglecting the very fundamentals of the vehicle itself, and that is doing really silly things that you and I think no one does anymore, like hitting respond all instead of sending a message to only one person in their email group to whom they wish to have a communication. It doesn't seem possible that we're doing that. And if we have a minute or two, I will tell you a personal story.
Please.
I went to my local newspaper, the Denver Post, because I had an appointment to have lunch with a friend who is an editor there. And there's a massive room of, you know, cubicles. So all these people are sitting within this little, you know, cubicle city. And so you don't really see anyone often unless someone stands up. And I was asked to just be seated, and she would be with me as soon as she had met her deadline, which was, you know, within minutes. So I'm sitting there looking out over this vast area of cubicle tops, and up pops her head like, you know, a prairie dog in from a hole in the ground. I live in Denver, so that's why I know about prairie dogs. And she has this horror-stricken look on her face, and I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, something terrible has gone wrong. So finally, we get together and we're having lunch. The whole lunch, she is totally distressed, and she says she's trying to complain about her boss to a friend.
I know where this is going.
Yes. However, she did not look to see that this was a group email, and her boss was one of the people to whom the email went. And so she said, I don't think I'll have a job by the time I come back from lunch. So she did get it resolved. I don't know the ongoing relationship between boss and subordinate, but that is just one of the things that, you know, that is one of the top things that people find really irritating in business. And the second thing is, in that regard, is that the other 15 people who might be part of your email group do not want to know that you're saying, happy birthday, Susie. You know, they want to just have your valuable input, and that would be new and valuable input on the topic at hand, because everyone has too much to do, and no one wants to read personal emails that have nothing to do with them. I've served on boards of directors, and I know that it makes my own jaw tight just thinking about, you know, those ridiculous emails, even though I would repeatedly say, could we please restrict the emails to the business at hand and take off list, because we were calling it a list at that point, take off list your individual greetings to, you know, two people on the board. Sorry, a long story to make that point.
No, it's good. I'm actually reminded of a kind of a pre-internet story that I heard. It also happened at a newspaper where apparently an older reporter was carrying on a bit of an older married reporter was carrying on a bit of an affair with an intern, and the intern had decided it was over. The reporter didn't want it to be over and wrote this long, detailed letter about their affair with all kinds of personal, very personal stuff, and sent it. You know, they were on computers, but there was no internet, and he sent it to the printer, but apparently he sent it to the wrong printer. And someone picked it up and looked at it and couldn't help but read it. It was like going by a slow-moving car wreck, you know, a train wreck. You just had to read it, and thought it was so fascinating and made copies of it.
Oh, dear.
And spread it out. So, I mean, you know, these things have been going on for a while. They take different, they happen in different ways. But, yeah, I mean, I can imagine that people get – I mean, they get useless emails all day, but then when when people don't understand the difference between sending it to one person and sending it to a group, right. People don't understand CC or BCC, and my God.
Yeah, or looking to see exactly who it's going to, for sure. Yes, I think the second item that I hear most often, and we'll stick with the mechanics of email for a moment, are the messages that one senior executive told me. For example, he has someone went in his email group, an equal or a superior, one or the other, who puts on, they use Outlook, as many businesses do, for their email. And he puts these little red exclamation points in the margin, which is to indicate that this is of urgent, high level importance. And he said, immediately in joining the organization, he would in a panic look at these. But he learned quickly that this person's idea of urgent was no one else's idea of urgent. So, be aware that to follow the protocol. I think this is probably item number three that I hear the most complaints about, is that people in the workplace have not bothered to learn what the policies, procedures, and guidelines of their organization are as regards to business email. And, of course, that would probably start with the basic fact: should you put anything personal on there? And the answer to that almost always is no. Perhaps is always no. And of course, our most recent national example of this, perhaps international example of this, is the Hillary Clinton email debacle and what is going to end up between knowing the rules and following the rules and disregarding the rules. So it's, if we didn't think it was important, now we might just check the news and see. I think Hillary is even conceded that it, in fact, is very important that you know the rules and follow the rules meticulously. And that obviously is going to put you in better stead with your employer. Perhaps the next thing, Bob, that I hear most often is the email that perhaps, like your introduction, is very, the author is very impressed that they have this superior style, how, and they wish to indulge it for pages and pages, and in this case, screens and screens. Senior level executives tell me they open these, you know, it gives them a migraine. They say, well, either I'm not going to deal with this, or I will, if there's a kernel of anything in here that I need to know, I will deal with it later. So, remember that if that you need, in particularly in business, to edit what you write. And you can't spend too much time doing that. Obviously, we all have time frames that we have to work within. But it, you need to take, a sharp cursor, let's call it, to what you've written and get it down to its essential best. And this often works best if you have a subject with an action verb and the two located very close together. And in addition to that, putting your modifiers very close to what they modify, because we're all dealing with email overload. We want to look at it. We want to be able to immediately understand it and be able to take action.
Okay. Now, for those of our audience who you just lost with subject, action verb, and modifier, why don't you give an example?
Okay.
Because I know there's people who are long out of high school and are like, you know, those terms sound familiar, but I can't quite place them.
Let's see. Production line number 3, assembled, tra-la, tra-la. So production line would be the noun. I should say line would be the noun. Production would be the modifier, which describes the noun, and assembled is the action verb here. So put those things close together, and as you know, as the beginning of that sentence illustrates, have your modifier as close to the word it modifies as possible. That is, you know, is going to be clear. You know, you don't necessarily, you want to alter your style a little bit to make it more interesting so it doesn't look like a telegram. But all, at the same time, in the workplace, following that rule most of the time is going to be the best way to succeed in business today, which is doing business by email, unfortunately, for the most part. And actually, that will lead me, Bob, to the next complaint I hear so often, and that is before anyone starts to send a message, they need to analyze the vehicles that are available to them, or the bandwidth, as many people like to say today, of their message, what its nature is, and what the best vehicle is for conveying that. I was talking with a consultant recently who was called into a business that was in terrible, in a terrible dysfunctional state, and the morale was in the basement. And she said she started interviewing people because, of course, that's her approach to finding out, you know, the nature of what's going on here. What is the real basis of the problem? And, for example, one person said that her boss, whom she had had for approximately 3 years and was located in the office next to hers, had never in that period of time given her directly face-to-face an assignment or even a performance review. He did everything by email. And, you know, there are those messages that take face-to-face a human moment. And I would say, you know, analyze your message. If it has high emotional content, if it's personal or has personnel information, if it's if it needs negotiation, those are three primary situations where you would be best advised to pick up the telephone and give a call and handle the business. This is the next thing that a senior executive told me, that a lot of people in business, he is finding, particularly a lot of his subordinates, are using email to just pass the buck. Mm-hmm. They're not making a decision. They're not moving the ball forward, to use a sports analogy. So analyze your message first and figure out, just a minute, okay, I want to get to this point. Now, what's the best vehicle for getting there? Maybe it's not email. Email is great for passing information from one person to another. It's great for saying, for example, are you going to be in the meeting on Thursday at 2:00? But it's not good for saying, we need to discuss the new business plan and how we're going to approach these new clients. You know, I mean, those things where a lot of negotiation and a lot of planning are involved are going to be much better handled in a face-to-face meeting or in a telephone call.
It's more and more common today to have people that are telecommuting, that are working from home, or that maybe they're time shifting their hours. They're, instead of coming in 9 to 5, maybe they're coming in 2 to 10, or they're coming in 6 to 2, something like that. How is business communication affected by that, or is it?
Well, it certainly is. And in addition to those situations, Bob, we have, in fact, one of the senior executives I love to interview, because he has he has universal problems. He deals with teams of people all around the world. So you have different time zones. You have people with different primary languages, different cultures. And of course, getting them all together at one time is much more difficult, if not impossible. So yes, and this is obviously why email has become more utilized in the business place than it was prior to most recently. It of course is for some of us who are not internet natives. It's not as well as certainly doesn't have the history that some other modes have, but. Yes, I mean, and this is why, again, being able to write succinctly, clearly, is extremely important.
Sandy, after email, I kind of imagine that the business writing task that most employees and managers and even executives alike fear composing is the report. Where are the trap doors in report writing, and what are some simple fixes for better results?
Well, I think yes, and this is certainly one example of where email works particularly well, because you're giving information to people. Again, the basic rules, you know, of writing clear and concisely need to be in effect. But when you talk about trap doors, I think what you really need to make sure that you're including in your report is to answer the six basic questions that, again, let's go back to high school or college. We need to make sure we have certainly covered. And that is the what, the when, the where, the why, the who, and how much. Mm-hmm. So those basic six questions, you know, will help you. Just use those as a guideline to make sure, you know, if it's an accident report that happened on Thursday, you want all the details. You want the who was there. You want exactly when it happened. You want to know what happened. You know, I mean, just make sure that you have all that basic information. You've probably, and many of the viewers have probably also, gotten so many emails where that basic information is incomplete. They may say, are you going to be at the meeting? Well, what meeting? When is it? Where is it? You know, and who's going to be there? I mean, you know, those questions will keep you out of a lot of trouble, and obviously help make the business of conducting business run much smoother.
Okay, I want to come back to the issue of style, because you support style in the book. You're for people using style within the business context. And actually, my favorite paragraph in the entire book, I want to read it to folks. It's actually at the top of page 70. And here's what you say. This is in the chapter titled Write with Style, Voice, and Tone. And here's what you say. Here's a simple test. Read aloud a few of those writers you admire and mark the places that exhibit great rhythm, style, and tone. Then read something you've written that has a similar audience and purpose and that requires about the same tone. How does your writing stack up? Have you varied the rhythm to make your writing interesting and pleasing to hear? It may sound silly, but personal style actually begins with someone else. The more you read and ponder the style of others who write well, the more you will see how they develop and express their ideas. This will help you develop your own personal style. This is a notion that, for me, goes all the way back to teaching my kids some basics of writing in middle school. And for me, it was as simple as, who do you like to read? And then when you write your own thing, read it out loud, because you'll know in an instant how it's going to sound to someone else. And that's not just having your teacher evaluate it, but in the business place, if you read this email out loud, if you pause long enough to read it out loud or mumble it, you know, if you're in a cubicle, you'll be in better shape, won't you?
Absolutely. This is and this is very important, and excuse me for my telephone. This is very, very important that people realize, you know, there is such a thing as natural talent. And you have met people, and I've met people who you immediately know they have a talent for writing. But it's also true that we can learn style. And exactly following this approach can get us there. Most of us were not born with a natural ability to keep people engaged and hanging on the edge of their seat waiting for our next words. But if we start to read the best writers, and in this case, obviously, business writers, but also a wide variety of very good writing, we will develop, and I think that's the key word, Bob, is develop a style that is unique to us. So even in the business world, we will, when someone reads something we have written, it will be apparent to them without seeing the signature that it is coming from us, that is basically our style, a refreshing, hopefully, and an engaging style in the business world. Yes, that's possible.
One more thing on this, along this line. Chapter 9, I thought, was kind of an eye opener, and it kind of fits together with this. The title is Caution: Yield to Grammar and Usage or Not. So I wanted to ask you, what you have a list of these. What are some of the rules of grammar to toss aside?
I think I don't want to go over them here, but I think I do cover them in the book, because some of these things are, over time, our language changes. And what was acceptable in speaking, particularly in writing, because we all, given a natural bent, will go back to a type of 19th century legalese that is very stilted and not easily understood. And it just, we've all read some legal documents that we thought, what in the world is this saying? By the time you read it the fourth or fifth time, you say, oh, okay, what they're actually saying is, and you finally have deciphered it, but you've put it into your own words. So why couldn't they have put it in, to just common language? And my other point about this is, over time, what we speak becomes part of the language. So some of the terms and rules of the past are now, no longer observed.
Well, and I completely agree. I mean, what I've said in situations over the years has been, when all else fails and you cannot seem to pull together what you want to say, just speak English.
Right.
Or talk English. I mean, that doesn't sound right, but just say it the way it needs to be said. Don't worry about hitting us with proper terminology. Just get it down on paper, read it aloud, listen to yourself, make sure it sounds like something you would respond to if you heard it, and then move on. Just get it out, get it done.
And this is a very good point you make, Bob, because the best communications are conversational. Mm-hmm. So it's if you can write like people speak, not only is it going to be simpler to understand, but people are going to read it because it's much more inviting. It's much more engaging. And I certainly endorse, in fact, I do say in the book that if you've written something, particularly something that has really a lot of importance, the first key I would say is, you know, obviously this won't be an email necessarily that you first create an email form. You might create it in a document first, just so you can get all the steps of writing concisely down. But once you've completed it, if you can leave it for even a few minutes to give it what I call some airtime, then you can come back and reread it and be more objective about it and see, have I covered everything? Can I say it more concisely? Is there anything I should edit out? Have I repeated anything? Is it organized really the way someone is logically going to think? And then after you have done that, yes, I totally agree that reading it out loud and being able to hear it is often the acid test as to whether or not you've done a good job.
Well, Sandy, as we kind of wind it down here, I have to tell you that I think you exhibited great bravery in mounting a book such as this, knowing that full well that the grammar police are lurking around the corner. And you know, they're waiting to tear you apart.
They are.
Right? I mean, have you had any run-ins with these folks?
Not yet. In fact, I was enormously gratified by the fact that Patricia O'Connell, who is sort of one of those people, she was I believe, book review editor at the New York Times, gave me a glowing report. So I don't know. That doesn't mean that the police aren't going to be out there. But some people on the beat evidently have found it entertaining and informative.
It is definitely entertaining. I want people to know that it is far more entertaining than you would expect from the title. The title, you go, "Oh, this is probably going to be dry. I know I need to read it, but it's a little dry." It's not a dry book at all. It's entertaining. It's there's lists. If you like to read lists, if you like to go the BuzzFeed route and just have it in easy to read in a section, you can read a chapter at a time. You'll learn something. It'll definitely. No matter what you do for a living, if you work in an office, if you work in a business, it will help you. And folks, listen, you can find Sandra E. Lamb's, and it's Sandra E. as the middle initial, Lamb. I don't want to run them together. Sandra E. Lamb's new book, Writing Well for Business Success, A Complete Guide to Style, Grammar, and Usage at Work, in great bookstores everywhere, or you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. If you are watching this on MrMedia.com, you can look below the video. You'll see a copy of the book. You can click on it right now, and Amazon can get it to you via drone, I think, in 30 minutes or less. Or, you know, if you like to go the old-fashioned way, they'll ship it to you normally in a day or two. Don't hold me to that drone thing. I'm not sure if that's true. Sandra, do you have a website people can find you at?
Yes, I would be happy to have people. In fact, I have some more tips on there if people want to go look at it. It's of course, www.sandralamb.com.
Ah, very good. Are you on Twitter, Facebook?
I am on Twitter and Facebook and all those other media places. And my Twitter is Sandra Lamb.
Okay. And Facebook, just look for your name?
Sandra Lamb, right. Okay. Right.
So why have I been saying E? I didn't need that E, did I?
You didn't need the E, but there came a time when I put it on the cover, you know, so now we're sort of stuck with it.
Got it. All right. Well, Sandy Lamb.
That's right.
As I know you go by. A pleasure to talk to you. A wonderful book for its purpose. And thank you so much for joining us today on Mr. Media.
Thank you for having me.
Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience full of high-strung grammarians just itching for a fight about, well, nothing anyone else considers important, in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida.